The little group of people would be squatting about amidst a litter of fern, moss, and such like dry material. Some of the women and children would need to be continually gathering fuel to keep up the fires. It would be a tradition that had grown up. The young would imitate their elders in this task. Perhaps there would be rude wind shelters of boughs on one side of the encampment. The old man, the father and master of the group, would perhaps be engaged in hammering flints beside the fire. The children would imitate him and learn to use the sharpened fragments. Probably some of the women would hunt good flints. They would fish them out of the chalk with sticks and bring them to the squatting place. There would be skins about. It seems probable that at a very early time primitive men took to using skins. And probably they were wrapped about the children and used to lie upon when the ground was damp and cold. A woman would perhaps be preparing a skin. The inside of the skin would be well scraped free of superfluous flesh with trimmed flints, and then strained and pulled and pegged out flat on the grass and dried in the rays of the sun. Away from the fire, other members of the family group prowl in search of food, but at night they all gather closely round the fire and build it up, for it's their protection against the wandering bear and such like beasts of prey. The old man is the only fully adult male in the little group. There are women, boys, and girls, but so soon as the boys are big enough to rouse the old man's jealousy, he'll fall foul of them and either drive them off or kill them. Some girls may perhaps go off with these exiles, or two or three of these youths may keep together for a time, wandering until they come upon some other group from which they may try to steal a mate. Then they would probably fall out among themselves. Some day, when he's 40 years old, perhaps, or even older, and his teeth are worn down and his energy abating, some younger male will stand up to the old man and kill him, and reign in his stead. There's probably short shrift for the old at the squatting place. So soon as they grow weak and bad-tempered, trouble and death come upon them. What did they eat at the squatting place? Primeval man is commonly described as a hunter of the great hairy mammoth, of the bear and the lion, but it's in the highest degree improbable that the human savage ever hunted animals much bigger than the hare, the rabbit, and the rat. Man was probably the hunted rather than the hunter. The primeval savage was both herbivorous and carnivorous. He had for food hazelnuts, beechnuts, sweet chestnuts, earthnuts, and acorns. He had crabapples, wild pears, wild cherries, wild gooseberries, bullaces, sorbs, sloes, blackberries, yewberries, hips and haws, watercress, fungi, the larger and softer leaf buds, nostoc, the vegetable substance called fallen stars by country folk, the fleshy, juicy asparagus-like rhizomes or subterranean stems of the labiatae and like plants, as well as other delicacies of the vegetable kingdom. He had birds' eggs, young birds, and the honey and honeycomb of wild bees. He had newts, snails, and frogs. The two latter delicacies are still highly esteemed in Normandy and Brittany. He had fish, dead and alive, and freshwater mussels. He could easily catch fish with his hands and paddle and dive for and trap them. By the seaside he would have fish, mollusca, and seaweed. He would have many of the larger birds and smaller mammals, which he could easily secure by throwing stones and sticks or by setting simple snares. He would have the snake, the slow worm, and the crayfish. He would have various grubs and insects, the large larvae of beetles and various caterpillars. The taste for caterpillars still survives in China, where they're sold in dried bundles in the markets. A chief and highly nourishing object of food would doubtlessly be bones smashed up into a stiff and gritty paste. A fact of great importance is this: primeval man wouldn't be particular about having his flesh food over fresh. He would constantly find it in a dead state, and if semi-putrid, he'd relish it nonetheless. The taste for high or half-putrid game still survives. If driven by hunger and hard-pressed, He would perhaps sometimes eat his weaker companions, or unhealthy children, who happened to be feeble, or unsightly, or burdensome. The larger animals, in a weak and dying state, would no doubt be much sought for. When these weren't forthcoming, dead and half-rotten examples would be made to suffice. An unpleasant odour wouldn't be objected to. It's not objected to now in many continental hotels. The savages still huddled close together round their fire with fruits, bones, and half-putrid flesh. We can imagine the old man and his woman twitching the skin of their shoulders, brows, and muzzles as they were annoyed or bitten by flies or other insects. We can imagine the large human nostrils, indicative of keen scent, giving rapidly repeated sniffs at the foul meat before it was consumed. The bad odour of the meat, and the various other disgusting odours belonging to a haunt of savages, being not in the least disapproved. Man at that time wasn't a degraded animal, for he had never been higher. He was therefore an exalted animal, and low as we esteem him now, he yet represented the highest stage of development of the animal kingdom of his time. That is at least an acceptable sketch of a Neanderthal squatting place. But before extinction overtook them, even the Neanderthalers learned much and went far. Whatever the older Paleolithic men did with their dead, there's reason to suppose that the later Homo neanderthalensis buried some individuals, at least with respect and ceremony. One of the best-known Neanderthal skeletons is that of a youth who apparently had been deliberately interred. He'd been placed in a sleeping posture, head on the right forearm. The head lay on a number of flint fragments carefully piled together, pillow fashion. A big hand axe lay near his head, and around him were numerous charred and split ox bones, as though there had been a feast or an offering. To this appearance of burial during the later Neanderthal age, we shall return when we are considering the ideas that were inside the heads of primitive men. This sort of men may have wandered, squatted about their fires, and died in Europe for a period extending over 100,000 years, if we assume, that is, that the Heidelberg jawbone belongs to a member of the species, a period so vast that all the subsequent history of our race becomes a thing of yesterday. Along its own line, this species of men was accumulating a dim tradition and working out its limited possibilities. Its thick skull imprisoned its brain, and to the end it was low-browed and brutish.